Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org.
Greetings from Nature Now in the whirl of spring growth and change, the first week of the wonderful month of May. Today's guest with me, Mary Robson, is Christy Lassen, who with her husband Mark owns Wild Birds Unlimited in Gardner. She has joined me in many seasons, and you will recognize her enthusiasm about all things bird-related. Today, we'll be finding birds' nests, which are the most important effort of a bird's life, I think, nesting and raising fledglings. Hi, Christy. Welcome.
Oh.
Let's start with a few observations about which birds you have seen arriving or settling in these recent spring weeks.
Well, rufous hummingbirds are definitely here. They have been coming in mass. We're starting to see band-tailed pigeons again. We've had reports of red crossbills in the area. The American goldfinch are showing up. White-crowned sparrows are moving in. We've seen the swallows, the tree and the violet-green swallows are now all out in the field gathering bugs. The reports of yellow-rumped warblers and Townsend warblers. I keep hearing a Swainson's thrush, but I have not seen it yet. They're pretty
small. Oh, I would certainly love to hear that. That is one of the most elegant sounds of spring and summer.
It is my favorite.
It's lovely. Tell me just while you're here on this list, what is a red-billed cross?
A red crossbill.
Like a finch, maybe?
They're part of the finch family, and they have a hooked bill. So their upper bill crosses over their lower bill, and it crosses. It's actually not the easiest thing to see, and a lot of times they mix in with house finch or purple finch, so you don't really see them that often, but they are round, and if you can get an up-close look at it, they have one of the most interesting bills. And it's built specifically so they can pop the seeds out of pine cones.
That's what I was wondering. If with that bill, what do they do? So
yep.
They can get into the spaces in a pine cone and release the seed.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yes. They're beautifully colored. During their molt into mating colors, they start looking mottled, kind of red and reddish and yellow and orangish, and they're gorgeous birds.
Well, I've actually never heard you describe a bird as not appealing.
So,
that's the theme for the day, is the appealingness of birds. And we'll go to a mystery sound. A rather surprising one, which you may not have heard, and it represents a bird with an extremely strange way of making a nest. We'll tell you about it after we get through with our lovely interview here with Christy. Christy, it is certainly spring, and tell me where we are in the timing of nesting season.
We're right in the middle of it. There are some very early nesters that show up here that start nesting here on the peninsula. Our Anna's hummingbirds start their mating behaviors in December. And generally by January, the Anna's are sitting on nests, their first round of nests.
Wow.
So we're to the second round of babies for the Anna's hummingbirds. While the violet greens and the tree swallows have just started picking out nesting spots. They're just starting to work on nests, building nests and picking nesting spots. And then also the goldfinch who are here right now, they're just sort of flirting and socializing. They are
out of lockdown and they can get into a connection with others for a change.
So they're just flirting right now, the goldfinch.
Okay. Nests, I said, that's my idea, but I think it makes sense that they are vital to every bird. And this is really the essence of a bird's life, is to set up the world around it so that it can produce young. One of the things that we said was the nest builder begins with a master plan suited to its own species. That's in a book about birds called Bird Nest Egg Feather. And when I visualize a nest, I have one vision. I look at it, I think in my mind, it looks like a robin's nest. It's made out of grasses and it's woven into a round basket shape. But this is only one type of mini nests. And I thought we would start describing some of them by talking about the Western bluebird. I know this is something you're really interested in.
I am excited about the Western bluebirds this year. Our Western bluebird population here in the Northwest was pretty much almost completely wiped out at the turn of the century. Due to a few things, there were introductions of more aggressive non-native species like our English house sparrows and the starlings. They compete for habitat, they compete for nesting sites, they compete for food sources. And so they're quite a bit more aggressive than the bluebirds and tend to push them out of areas. Deforestation was a big part of the loss of habitat for Western bluebirds and the use of pesticides because Western bluebirds are insectivores. Uh-huh. They 85% of their diet is bugs. And so pesticide use, the food sources for the birds, and they cannot survive if there's no food here for them. In the 1960s is when people really started to take an interest in the Western bluebird, or in bluebird populations in general. In the East, bluebird trails became very, very popular where people would set up boxes along trail edges, along the fence, and create bluebird trails for the birds. And it was really successful and has hugely helped the Eastern population. Out here on the peninsula, the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society has created a group called Climate Watch. And part of their initiative is to help the Western bluebirds. And in 2018, they started putting up nesting boxes in appropriate areas, like in clear-cut areas where snags are plentiful. They put them in open forest areas, in DNR land, and in some residential private property.
Okay. You mentioned that numbers are increasing here.
Yes.
And weren't they sort of reintroduced to this area?
Definitely. Just this year, the Opus Group put in 14 boxes in Clallam County for Western bluebirds. But they did a Western bluebird repopulation program on the San Juan Islands. It started in, I believe, in 2007, and they've been working every year to help that population get stronger and stronger. The 2020, I just went through and looked at their website, and the 2020 highlights last year on the bluebirds on the San Juan Islands is that there were 30 adults confirmed, and that number has increased since 2018. There were only 23 adults that they counted in 2018. So 2020, they had 30 adults. They had 15 breeding territories that were established and up from 13 territories at the end of 2018. And they had 69 nestlings that they banded. And so it's pretty exciting. I like that.
It's amazing. And I was wondering, when you put a box up for a bluebird, the bluebird then brings its own nest materials in and builds a nest inside the box.
Yes, absolutely. Bluebirds prefer things like soft grasses. They like pine needles, strips of bark as nesting material. They don't really use like soft downy fluff. They don't use that so much. It's mainly grasses, bark strips, and pine needles, which is pretty cool.
One of the things that we did want to talk about is the materials used for different kinds of nests. And I told you I had a memory of one of the birthday parties for my son in Seattle. We had paper ribbons about 3/8 of an inch wide and quite long, which we were throwing around, and they turned up in a robin's nest in our apple tree. It was really charming. But I wanted to talk with you about the question of somebody thinking, I'm going to help a bird by leaving out nesting materials. What is the research on this now?
So they've come up with some new ideas of things that really help the birds out. Things that are really helpful that you can put out are, you can leave dead twigs out, dead leaves, dry grasses. You want to make sure that the grass hasn't been treated with a pesticide, things like that. Feathers, any kind of old feathers. If you have an old down pillow, you can take out and the birds love it. Plant fluff like cattails, the cattail fluff or cottonwood down works great. Moss, bark strips, pine needles, natural cotton or natural wool batting works great for them. The things that you don't want to provide for nesting birds, there's some very common sense sort of things. Like you don't want to leave out plastic strips. You don't want to leave tinsel outside, holiday tinsel. Cellophane doesn't work good for them. Aluminum foil, you know, just simple sort of things that you wouldn't really think of, but it's always good to say, you know, don't leave those out.
Well, Christy, I have occasionally let dryer lint out for birds, but this is not a good idea either.
Dryer lint, they're coming to realize that dryer lint, although it's popular, and it seems like it would be the perfect thing for birds, it quickly loses its fluffiness and its structure when it gets wet. It just sort of crumbles, and it also absorbs water and keeps babies kind of cold and wet, which we don't really want to do. Honestly, you would think would be good for the birds, but it's not really helpful to them. Human hair, a lot of people think that if they, you know, get a haircut, they can throw their hair outside and birds will use it. But according to experts, human hair is sort of a triple threat for birds. It's long, it's thin, it's strong. These characteristics can be really detrimental to birds, allowing the hair to easily ensnare around their legs or wings, and it can actually sever it. You can wrap hair around your finger and cut off your circulation. So you know, if you do that, you don't want that to happen to a bird inside a nest.
Wrapping it around your finger and cutting off circulation sounds like something a bored third grader would do for the class.
But there's a couple more things too. Yarn and string, they say don't leave those things out. They can do the same thing. They can wrap around chicks or hatchlings. One other thing that a lot of people do is they use their pet hair as nesting material too. I would say it's fine as long as the hair hasn't been treated for fleas or ticks. You don't want that sort of synthetic stuff introduced into birds or baby bird nests. You know, so if your pets are not treated for that stuff, like if you use a topical flea treatment or tick treatment, maybe don't use that in your nesting material.
Okay, that is something that is new news. And some of that is, it's on the Cornell site, right? If you want to
Cornell and Audubon. Those are the two sites that I went to verify what I knew about using as nesting material. The Cornell Lab of Ornithology is always, always doing research, always backing up their data. And they care about the birds and they care about scientific research too.
Okay. Well, now that we know that birds need natural materials to make their nests, where do they put nests? All of us have seen nests in odd places. I just talked with the people at Far Reaches Farm in Port Townsend. They have a killdeer nest, which has appeared on gravel near a production area, and they have about a 50-square-foot place that they just have to stay away from. So I was wondering about other places that nests have occurred. So
one of the most common ones that we hear about are juncos nesting in hanging baskets. And so, you know, we always tell people, just take a look in there before you start flooding it with a hose, you know, make sure that you might have a baby junco nest in there. They love hanging baskets. I've seen customers have shown me pictures of hummingbirds building nests on wind chimes. So right on the little wind chime, a hummingbird nest, which was really beautiful. And then I saw one of the funniest ones I've ever seen was a swallow nest, a barn swallow nest that built the nest in between the horns of a great horned owl statue that was put up there to sort of scare them off.
But so they got used to like, boy, this is really scary. I'm going to move right in.
Yeah, a little naughty, naughty, boo-boo sort of thing, you know, about that. We're just going to nest here anyways.
I saw a picture of one in an apron that had been hung on a clothesline.
Yeah.
Apparently somewhere after the apron was there for a while, somebody built a nest in the pocket.
We've heard of old boots getting used in, like, someone puts their hiking boots up for the season in their shed and birds moving in. Yeah.
Well, we can summarize part of this, that what the bird is looking for is protection from predators.
Absolutely. Yes. Protection from the elements, somewhere close to food sources, appropriate things like that for birds generally drive them to build a nest somewhere.
Well, and if you are fortunate enough to see a bird nest, you really should not collect it and bring it into the house. What's the meaning of that?
All of our native birds are protected by the Migratory Bird Act, which was passed in, I believe it was in 1919. To protect our migratory birds. It is not legal to possess bird nests. It's not legal to possess bird feathers. It's not legal to possess native wild birds at all if you are not permitted to do that. And so, and it's all about conservation. It's all about the survival of the species and helping them, be vital.
Well, one of the things about birds' nests is that some birds reuse nests or use nests that they find, right?
There are definitely birds that reuse nests year after year. More often, it's birds that will use the same spot year after year.
Okay.
Are actually birds that will reuse their nests. Hummingbirds will stack nests on top of each other. They'll just keep building them in the same spot. They'll build a new one right on top of the old one.
For heaven.
Large birds, birds of prey, so like your ospreys, the eagles, the raptors, hawks, they build large, complicated nests that are kind of unfeasible for them to be built each season. So like eagles tend to add about 2 feet to each season to a nesting site. So they'll use
that in height or width?
In height. So they'll add another 2 feet of material usually each season when they're using that. I read an interesting thing where the largest eagle nest that they've ever recorded was in St. Petersburg, Florida. And the nest was 2 stories tall. It was 9.5 feet wide, and it weighed 3 tons.
That is pretty staggering.
Yeah, a lot of nests.
Well, one of the things that I have found about eagle nests locally is that they're easy to see with binoculars. I was on Indian Island in that little park and could see an eagle's nest at a distance. And because they're so big, even if you're nearsighted like me, you can see an eagle's nest nicely through binoculars. But leaving the nests alone is absolutely necessary. And you mentioned, we've talked about Discovery Bay Rescue. You mentioned a nest with fledglings that was found maybe by you in a downed tree.
We had a nest of bush tits come in to the store. Someone had taken down a tree in their yard, and when the tree came down, they found the bush tit nest, which looks like a sock. It looks like a woven woolen sock. They're amazing little nests.
The same shape as an oriole nest?
Same shape as an oriole nest. Those two are weavers. They weave sock-like structures that hang from limbs. And the babies stay down. The entrance is up at the top, and the babies move down at the bottom of the sock. So that whole nest came into the store. We're sort of a drop-off point, an in-between point for people who are west of us to drop off injured birds at our store, and then we get them to Discovery Bay Wild Bird Rescue, or they come and meet here at the store and pick them up. And the bush tit nest came in. So that was really interesting to get to see it, to get to see the babies. They were tiny. And Cindy Daly, who runs Discovery Bay Wild Bird Rescue, she did an amazing job and kept those babies alive.
Wow.
They were amazing. It was very cool. It was a couple of years ago, but it's definitely one of those things that sticks in your brain because it's such an unusual sighting. You don't really get to see those babies very often because they're so tiny and they stay in the nest really until they fledge. And it was very exciting though. It was cool to
get. Bush tit is a fairly small bird, and it seems to me it must be a real effort to build a sock. I mean, I'm wondering if they start at the top and work down. or
I've honestly never seen it in progress, but it's, I've only seen them hanging in trees, and then the one time that we did see it when that came into the store. But they're works of art. They're amazing.
I was also thinking at this point about nest sizes, because we have mentioned both the hummingbird and the eagle. That has to be the widest range of nest sizes that might be seen, at least in our zone.
Definitely. So hummingbirds, their nests are the size of golf balls. And then if you think of an eagle's nest at 9.5 feet wide, I mean, that's a huge difference in nest sizes. They come in all shapes, all sizes, all places.
And as we're reaching the conclusion of this, but not the end of the information, let's summarize what a nest has to provide. We talked a little bit about protection.
Well, definitely protection for the nesting mother, for the babies. You want that. It needs to have protection from predators, protection from the elements. So, you know, rain, wind, snow sometimes, all of those things play into keeping babies warm and dry and healthy. Food sources are a big reason why some birds will nest in certain areas. Western bluebirds are insectivores, so they tend to nest on the edges of meadows, field areas with forests in the background, because they catch bugs on the wing and eat them. The same with swallows and things like that. I personally am on kind of a mission to get people to keep snags in their yards. Snags are, I keep threatening to have a t-shirt made that says, "I love snags." I don't think it would be a big shirt in our store, but I would wear one. And because snags are fantastic habitat trees, they're wonderful for nesting. Woodpeckers will drill holes into snags, and then birds like swallows or western bluebirds or squirrels will get in there and use those nesting holes. We'll reuse them after the woodpeckers are done with them. They also provide food, because bugs will get into there and start working on the dead wood of snags, and they provide tons of food sources for the birds.
Christy, thank you. I really appreciate it, because it's always a pleasure to join with you in Bird Thoughts. And this is another thing to look for when we're out in the world, is what is a bird nest doing, where it is, and what does it look like? And our mystery bird was the belted kingfisher. Because we were talking about nesting, the kingfisher came to mind. They live year-round along rivers and coastal areas on the Olympic Peninsula, and they're present in most U.S. states where they can find food and shelter. But what a project their nesting areas are. These birds tunnel into banks, making retreats from 1 to 8 feet long, sloping upward to keep water out. And they do it by burrowing out the area with your feet. Can you imagine being a bird that is about to burrow out a tunnel 8 feet long? Both the male and female birds dig, taking from 3 days to 3 weeks to complete their excavation. They need areas without heavy root or rock obstructions. And they have to be near water, because kingfishers forage in water for their food. They observe through clear water from a perch, such as a bare branch, and will spot their prey, dive into the water, and grab the food in their bill, then fly out and pound it. The fish, the crawfish, or other water dwellers, they pound it on a branch before swallowing it whole. I have also read that they will occasionally eat berries when available. This must be dessert, or maybe they want to just eat something they don't have to dive for. Locally, I have seen their burrows in the banks at Fort Townsend Park when you're walking on the beach there. So that is our mystery sound for today, the strange and wonderful kingfisher who digs a tunnel with its feet. So thanks to Christy and thanks to all of you for joining us on Nature Now today. Our music today is the Beach Boys singing a completely unknown song, Bluebirds Over the Mountain, recorded a long time ago. Thanks to Nora Petrick for engineering this show. We appreciate her work tremendously. And listen for podcasts of hundreds of shows by looking at kptz.org for the podcast section and scrolling to Nature Now.
Und jetzt haben wir die Beach Boys im Studio und ihr Titel Bluebirds Over the Mountain.